That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, it's Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
Haven't got Alice back quite yet, but she's back with us next week, and we were really excited to have her. We've got in the studio today with us for Stage Direction, we've got Arlo Green and Dawn Cheong. Kia ora, Arlo. Kia ora, Dawn. How are we this morning? Or this afternoon?
Yeah, this afternoon. Good. Yeah, thank you for having us.
Feeling really good. Nice to be here.
Yeah, welcome to the studio. First time here?
A couple of times I've been here.
Oh, nice.
First time here for me.
Yeah.
Welcome back. So Arlo and Dawn are two of the cast members for a new show presented by Auckland Theatre Company and Silo Theatre, Scenes from the Climate Era. Very exciting. Let's talk about the show. So the show is a conversation about climate change, but it's also intertwining a range of emotions, comedy, rage, vulnerability, which I think is a really great way of kind of presenting those ideas. You know, it feels quite relatable. I think a lot of people are feeling a lot of mixed emotions about that topic. Can you tell me a little bit more about some of the key ideas of this show?
It's kind of hard to... Well, climate change is hard to talk about because I think that everyone is at different levels with it, right? And so I think the show addresses that. It's sort of... it takes on a multitude of perspectives, a multitude of arguments, I'm not doing a very good job talking about it, but the show does a great job, so you should come and watch the show, and it will do a much better job than this.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand as well that different countries and different parts of the world will experience climate change in many different ways. So I think the great thing about what David Finnegan has done, who's the writer of the show, worked along and did a lot of research with, obviously, climate activists, and his research on scientists, you know, providing all these scientific data and putting it in a very narrative form that is not a full-on narrative, like a full-length play, but they're just vignettes of scenes. Sometimes the characters are pretty fleshed out, and sometimes they're just like two different ideologies banging heads against each other, and that's where the dialogue and the interesting ideas come about. So I think in that sense, the form itself is quite interesting.
Yeah, I find the form really interesting, and it'll be cool to see. And there's clearly, you know, some big topics being discussed here. What do you kind of hope that people take away from seeing it, or maybe are left thinking about after seeing the show?
We were very lucky enough to have a conversation with David Finnegan just a few days ago, and he said that, you know, it's important that the show is at a certain length, because what he wants for the goal of an audience is to watch the show, go out and start discussing about climate change and how different people will experience climate change and the material itself. So I think the goal is really getting people excited and getting a dialogue within society or within the community itself, and just be like, oh, look at art and look at all this ideas of data and scientists and climate change all mashed into one. And that makes it quite interesting for artists and just ordinary people who live through the climate that we live in today.
Yeah, totally. And what's that kind of process been like for you guys personally doing this show?
Pretty interesting. I mean, I'm probably somebody who has been broadly ignorant towards climate change, in all honesty. I think that growing up in a low-income household, you don't sort of, your primary goal is survival. Like, you're not worried about, should we buy this over this, because it's more, you know, better for the planet and things like that. And so part of me probably had a little bit of a rock in my shoe about that, because I felt a lot of shame in that, you know, our family didn't have, you know, a car that was friendly to the environment, or we'd go through a lot of rubbish, being like, you know, a lot of kids and stuff like that in that house. And so I think it's been a real, you know, come to Mecca sort of moment for me, educating myself a lot more. And it's a big topic, and so I feel silly sat in this little studio trying to dissect it. But I think that we do our best in the theatre show. And it's not even about dissecting it. It's not even about solving it. It's not even about like pushing any one perspective. It's just about sort of lighting that fire and then you do as an audience what you will with it.
I think as well what, you know, our background, because I also come from a lower income, is that we bring a very different perspective on it as well. There was a lot of discussion on like, well, it's really nice that a country can think about recycling or have money to even put aside for recycling and all these things where, you
the
know,
countries we're from, that's just not, we're not developed enough to start having these conversations.
Or like, the money is just put into something else, infrastructure and hospitals and things like that. So for me, the discussion is really interesting. And there is a scene, you know, Bechdel was heavy, where these ideas also kind of like come into play, where you're just talking about, you know, an activist is like, no, I want to be a little bit more proactive and almost go into like a violent place when it comes to, you know, eco-activism. And then there's another perspective. It's like, well, you know, if there's a flood or if there's a heat wave coming, people are not going to be like, it's fossil fuels. It's like, nah, it's the government. It's the corruption. It's like, you got to deal with like, you know, there's no food for people, you know? So that conversation of going, we're lower income. We can't, we didn't think about recycling. Well, of course you can't, because you're also thinking about just putting food on the table, you know? So this is a very interesting perspective as well to have a look and have a conversation with climate change within those perspectives.
Because a lot of blame and judgment comes with these conversations. And I think that I was watching a documentary the other day on how companies like Coca-Cola started pushing this whole, like, make sure you recycle, make sure, like, you get rid of the bottle, you. And it's like, there would be no need for the recycling if you weren't creating that problem. It's like, it's like this corporate gaslighting is like quite incredible. And yeah, like with, you know, being from the Middle East and stuff, like these countries, like they have no choice. Like they're being exploited in that way. And it does feel like a governmental problem, whereas sometimes we reduce it to an individual problem. But it's like, as individuals, you're probably going to do better if you change your government than if you like just recycle that bottle. You know, I'm not saying throw that bottle on the street, but I think, me personally, government is where this is all going to change. Like, you know, you also voting with your dollar, right? Like being conscious of what companies you support. And because they will follow suit. Like they will listen to the market. They will listen to their people because they're scared of losing money. And it's such a big thing, right? Like,
Can I say something?
Yeah, please.
Sorry, I think that's really interesting as well, because there is a lot of blame put on the individual, I think, especially in, you know, those neoliberal ideas of personal responsibility and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and stuff. And there's all of that, you know, that it's such a loaded sentiment, I think. And it's really interesting to, you know, hear it applied in that way, you know, in that idea as well.
Yeah. Because it, you know, when people are going, no straws and no plastic bags, it's like, okay, this one person doing a plastic straw thing, yet, you know, I think in 2022, the ocean was literally on fire because of an oil spill. You know, it's like, well, let's talk about my one straw while these guys are literally setting the ocean on fire.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, what's happening? Where is the focus and what is the priority here? You know, it's like, yet again, you're putting the responsibility on the backs of the poor. You're putting the responsibility on the backs of people when it's literally these big companies that can just do whatever they want. They get a fine, like $1 million or like $1 billion, and their revenue is so high. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't understand what the punishment is for these people if they can just pay off this little percentage of money and the money they get back is like 100 times more. This is just pocket money for them, you know? So of course they're going to continue doing what they're doing because it's just small change. But for people like us, it's like, oh, it's our fault, you know? And like in the whole conversation of recycling and garbage, you know, you have this in Malaysia, we have lots of rubbish and pollution, but that's also because you have countries like Canada bringing their rubbish to our country to get rid of your rubbish, and that's why you're so green.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not Canada's fault. It's our government that to accept this rubbish from Canada for millions and millions of dollars. Like, this happens on the daily, like in Cambodia and Vietnam and Malaysia. We're getting rid of other countries' rubbish.
Yeah.
And that is something that I don't think people know or even talk about, you know?
No. Totally, yeah. And I mean, implementing conversation about the climate crisis and these issues into entertainment and literature is not exactly new, but it's definitely being talked about a lot more now, which is really cool to see. What's the kind of significance of bringing that to the theatre scene, which I think is probably even newer than other things, yeah.
I just want to go on the record and say, I don't think Don't Look Up is a good movie. They made me do that in the promo. I'm correcting the record. I don't think Don't Look Up is a good movie, but so he saw that in promo. I don't stand by that, but I think that you know, it's the honey with the medicine, right? Like conversations, and you say this actually in one of your scenes, like the you talk about this with stats and numbers. It just shuts people off. Like, it's overwhelming. It isn't human. Like, at the end of the day, like, we're feeling beings, and intellectualizing things isn't going to hit hard as like. Just being like, I don't know, human about it. And so I think entertainment's so human, and it's so, it's a really good vehicle for conversation. And yeah, but otherwise too depressing. What the hell, like, who's gonna listen?
But also what an impactful way to bring out information that is so hard to digest and so hard to realize. You know, like, you have floods in which happened, you know, last year, and people were, you know, really devastated by that, you know, and because it doesn't happen all the time, and if we're not careful, it might be a regular thing, you know, but we won't feel that because we somehow kind of have amnesia sometimes, and maybe that might be like our survival brain just going, oh no, it's fine, let's just keep moving forward. But I think if we don't collectively just go, okay, remember those floods, remember when you don't have a house anymore, and then your insurance and your car is gone, you know, like, you have to remember these things, that if we're not careful with the environment, then this could be on the regular. And I think it's really hard for people to imagine that. So to put that within like the entertainment industry or of theater and film or music and films, or, you know, it's just easier for people to enter into these ideas.
Yeah. That's why it's so important to stop using language like 1 in 100 years.
Because it's really hard to imagine that. It's really hard to imagine what that's going to be like, you know?
And the show, is a great visualizer for what I like about the show is that we jump to the future with science-based, like, David's done a lot of research, and a lot of the scenes set in the future are probably very accurate, you know? And so seeing some of them, you're like, oh, okay, that's what it will be like to live in 2042. That's what it's going to be like 3,000 years from now, which is a really interesting concept as well. And I just don't think people like being lectured, right? Like, we're all little kids. Like, we don't want to be told off. You don't want to feel like a bad person. And so I think theater is a good way of saying, hey, no, this isn't anybody's fault. We just like got to think about it and do something about it.
But I think the wonderful thing about this play is that every scene that David has written is from a place of data, or from a scientist or a researcher or a book. It's not like, well, this writer's just imagining a scenario.
It's not rhetoric.
You know, it's like, it's every scene has something that that came from an information, a scientific data. So. And then it grew. And that's the beautiful thing about it. So it's not like, you know, picking things in the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a cool conversation we've had today. Thank you both so much for coming in. That was Arlo and Dawn speaking to us about Scenes from the Climate Era, a new show on that they're in, showing at Q Theatre from the 2nd to the 24th of August. You can get tickets from qtheatre.co.nz. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Have a lovely rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.
That was Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.